MIT. So thank you for the thanks for the organizer to giving me this opportunity to speak here. I actually didn't realize I have the chance to hold this speak until yesterday. So, this talk is about quantum phase, wave function renormalization, and tensor product states. And this is joint work with Zhengcheng Gu and Xiaogang Wen. This talk will be a continuous part of what Professor Wen talked about this morning. As discussed in the morning, we define, states, two states are within the same gap quantum phase if and only if they can be related by a local unitary transformation. According to my understanding, this is almost proved, but if you want to know the details, I can tell you later, but I won't dig into it now. So, writing like this. So if two states, psi 0 and psi 1, they're in the same phase, and we can relate them by a local unitary transformation. And by local unitary transformation, I mean, so first, in the first form, it can be a finite time unitary evolution with local Hamiltonian. Or in a quantum circuit language, it is a finite depth quantum circuit with local unitary operation. So if I draw a picture, it will be something like this. Every square is a local unitary operation. And in every layer, there are many local unitary operations, but they commute with each other. And there are a finite number of layers. So this is a finite depth local unitary circuit. So this local unitary transformation defines an equivalence relation between states in the same phase. And Professor Wen talked about it this morning, that if we can find the fixed point local unitary transformations, it can help us find the fixed point states in each phase and hence give a one-to-one labeling of each topological quantum phase. And the next question is, given this fixed point, we want to have a local unitary transformation that will flow any other states in the same phase to the fixed point, given any arbitrary state, we can know which phase the state belongs to. So this is the goal of my talk: how to find such a renormalization transformation that does this job. Okay. So a local unitary circuit, we can think of it picturally like acting locally so that they can be used to remove local entanglement. And states which only have short-range entanglement, they can be completely disentangled like this. So short-range entanglement, we can apply a finite depth local unitary circuit so that every qubit is finally in a product phase and the state is totally disentangled. But for states with long-range entanglement, for example, states with topological order or something, they cannot be totally disentangled, but they can get rid of somehow the short-range structure that disguises the global structure. So here, we apply a local unitary transformation to the state and decouple some local degrees of freedom, and then we can get rid of the freedoms. So actually, this is somehow a generalized local unitary transformation, because in the first step we do some transformation which does not change the local Hilbert space. Okay, we map two qubits to two qubits. This is the unitary operation in a usual sense. But in the next step, we remove some decoupled degrees of freedom. We are allowed to do so because this will not change the phase of the state. We can, just like we can, if we are given a topological order state, we can add some decoupled degrees of freedom in the zero state, and that will not change the global phase of the system. So now to say the equivalence relation between the system, so now we are actually defining equivalence relation between systems defined on different Hilbert space instead of saying that two states are in the same phase, if and only if they can be related by unitary transformation, we say that we're actually saying that they are in the same phase if and only if we can relate them, if we can find a unitary transformation acting on a state, tensor product with some product state, and we can map them back and forth, then we are satisfied that they are in the same phase. Okay, so this is the case that we only require locality in the local unitary transformation. But what if there's symmetry? If the system has certain symmetry that we're required to keep, then we cannot do the local unitary transformation as we like. We must require that the local unitary transformation to preserve the symmetry. So two states are in the same gap phase with the symmetry if and only if they are related by local unitary transformations that preserve the symmetry. So now local unitary transformations with the same symmetry define the equivalence relation between symmetric states in the same phase. Okay, so here again we apply the local unitary transformations, but the local unitaries must have the same symmetry. And again, when we decouple these, when we throw away this decoupled degrees of freedom, they must not carry non-trivial quantum number. That means we must keep track of the symmetry as we evolve, as we do the everything to the state.
So ideally we would apply the local unit transformation in a way that does not break the transmissional symmetry, but we haven't
reduced the degree of freedom, right? When we do it, it seems to me that we would have to break some transmission symmetry of the original lattice.
You don't have to, you can just reduce the degrees of freedom on the side. But
on the side.
But what I do in the following, we do break the translational symmetry somehow, I'll show you later. So according to this definition, this is the phase diagram that we imagine would look like. So without symmetry, the quantum phase will be divided into two parts. The first part is called a short-range entanglement phase. So such phases can all be connected to the trivial phase by local unitary transformations. And the next part is called long-range entanglement. So this is some topological order phase. And there are many of them, so there are one and two. They are different, and they cannot be related by local unitary transformation from one to the other. But with symmetry, the phase diagram will be more complicated. And the yellow part is still the short-range entanglement part, and on top, this is symmetry breaking short range entanglement.
Yeah. So basically, Landau's theory of symmetry breaking phases can be captured here. And the next part is the symmetric short range entanglement phases. So the symmetry is not breaking in these phases, but if you require the symmetry not to be broken when you do the local unitary transformation, these phases cannot be mapped to each other. For example, this is the Hadron phase and the trivial phase. If you require that the parity symmetry not be broken in the process, you cannot map one to the other. And also, this is the topological and the banding insulator, they differ if you require time reversal symmetry. So then next, the question we want to ask is, what kind of quantum phases exist in, say, in 1D or 2D, or hopefully we can classify all of them? So another way to say this question is, what are the fixed point wave functions of these phases? And if you know the fixed point wave functions, say you solve the equation Professor Wen gave this morning, and you classify all the topological phases. The next question is how to generate a renormalization flow that flows every other state and arbitrary state in the phase to the fixed point so that we can identify the phase of the state. And so our result in short, is that we found such a way to generate a local unitary transformation for any tensor product states in 1D and 2D. And using this algorithm, using this procedure, we can show that there is no topological order in 1D, which means that every state, every tensor product state in 1D can be mapped to product states by local unitary transformations. But if we require symmetry, of course, there are more different phases in 1D. And I will show you that if you require parity, at least there are two phases, just Haldane phase and the trivial phase, like I just told you about it. And finally, we can determine, for example, whether a state is in a topological order state or whether it's in a symmetry breaking phase by applying this algorithm to a general tensor product state. So first, let's start from 1D. So in 1D, this is the matrix product state. I guess I don't need to say too much about this. It's been well introduced in this conference. And so these are the matrices. And the coefficient of the matrix product space is given by the contraction of all the matrices on a line. And graphically, we like to draw it like this. So this is the dots are the qubits or the things. And the horizontal lines represent the indices of the matrices, the row and column indices of the matrices. And the vertical blue line is the physical index of the matrix. The small t? Oh, this is tensor trace.
Oh, tensor traces.
Yeah, just to keep the notation when I talk about tensors. It's easier. Sorry. So we use matrix product states basically because matrix product states can approximate ground states of 1D gap system well. And here we will consider translational invariant and finite dimensional matrices. So every matrix on different sides, they are the same. And the dimension here is finite. And we believe that such set of states captures all the physics in 1D gap system, of course. The properties of matrix product states is all captured by this local tensor. So this is the inner indices of the matrix, and this is the physical index. And if we want to do a local unitary transformation, we apply some unitary gate to this physical index. And the goal of applying this unitary transformation is to reduce the range of physical index so that we can simplify the state by removing local entanglement, and then finally we can hopefully achieve some fixed point state. In order to do so, I want to introduce a structure which is called a double tensor. So we take one piece of this tensor and take another piece and put it upside down, and mathematically that means I take the star of this tensor and then contract them on the vertical direction. I contract the physical index. So this is the double tensor with four indices, alpha prime, beta prime, and alpha beta. It's easy to see that if I apply a unitary transformation to the physical index so that it turns to the red one, and I construct the double tensor from the red one, this is equivalent to putting U and U dagger in between, but they will cancel. So after applying the local unitary transformation, the double tensor doesn't change. And actually, it can be shown that the two tensors are related by a unitary transformation on its physical indices, if and only if their double tensor are the same. So if we want to apply a unitary transformation to our matrix, to our state, we can just take the tensor and construct the double tensor and then decompose it again in some way, and then we have applied a unitary transformation to the state.
But we want to do it in an optimized way so that the physical index is reduced and we get rid of the local entanglement that is redundant. So the way to optimize this, to reduce the number of physical indices as much as possible, is to do a singular value decomposition of this double tensor. That is to say, I take these two indices and put them together and think of them as the row index of the matrix, and take these two, put them together and think of them as the column index, and then I do a diagonalization or singular value decomposition of this matrix, and then I get a bunch of eigenvalues. But these eigenvalues are not necessarily all non-zero. Many of them might be zero, and so I actually do not need that higher dimension to represent my physical state. So I can just get rid of all the zero eigenvalues and keep only the non-zero dimension here. So that is, by doing that, we can optimally reduce the physical indices. And similarly, we can do two local unitary transformation by putting two pieces of tensor together and construct the double tensor. And if you naively put them together, the physical indices here will be very big. This is, so I draw a very thick line here. But if you do the SVD decomposition, you actually find that you don't need so many physical indices to represent the state, and you only retain the non-zero ones. So this is reduced again to a thin line, and then you decompose it into a new state. So back to the previous picture, this is what we're actually doing this. We apply some unitary transformation here, and we get rid of the decoupled degrees of freedom, the unnecessary degrees of freedom. So we can do this and reduce the physical indices on two sides to one, and then we can do it again. We can come back and do it again, so we can take another two piece and combine them together and do it again. And so this is, yeah, this is, yeah.
The zero eigenvalue, you need that you can rotate the wave function on the side,
yeah,
such that that makes the representative wave function once you take the tensor product zero.
Okay. Basically, some of the degrees of freedom are not necessary. The only necessary degrees of freedom are the ones that are the dimensions of the support space. Mm-hmm. Other dimensions are not coupled, are basically not in the wave function. So even though they appear in the Hilbert space, they are not in the state.
So the same equation, if we take a wave function that consists of some structure on the site you're looking at, or the two, yeah, sites you're looking at, and, yeah, some anything on the other, on the rest, the contraction of the wave function you have with that thing is zero.
Yeah. So this procedure actually has been proposed several years ago So this is what we do to the state. We take two states together and do a unitary transformation and map it to the right one. And then we take two again and map and do it to a bigger unitary transformation and map it to the yellow one. So this you see that this does not actually preserve the translational invariance of the state, but we're doing some kind of blocking here. So if we look at the double tensor, what we are doing here is actually we take two double tensors and multiply them together and contract them in this way and get a new double tensor. And then we do it again. We take two double tensors and multiply them into a new one. And after doing a finite number of times, this will go to a fixed point structure. And it actually does go to a fixed point structure, and that is a nice form of fixed point. Because if you want to know the fixed point of the matrix when you take
many, many times of multiplication of it, or you take 2 to the n times of multiplication of the same matrix, you do the diagonalization of the matrix, and you find that. So this is, so I draw it in this way. So this is an eigenvector, and this is the right eigenvector, and this is another eigenvector, and this is the corresponding right eigenvector, and this is the eigenvalue. So for matrix product space, this eigenvalue actually carries the information about the correlation of the state. So the correlation of the state of length L will decay exponentially in L, and this is the decay constant. The lambda is the decay constant. So, and it is known that for any gapped ground state of 1D system, the correlation length is finite, which means that this lambda must be less than 1. So, and this guarantees that when we take 2 to the n times multiple of this double tensor, it will flow to only this largest eigenvector, and all the other ones will decay exponentially and finally go away. So the fixed point structure of our double tensor will be something like this, and this is a very nice structure, and you can just decompose this double tensor and see what finally the fixed point state you get. So the fixed point state turns out something to like this. So this is a site. This is the original site in our lattice. And every site is composed of 2 small spins. And every spin is coupled in a dimer state with another one in a neighboring site. And the dimer looks something like this. So it's eta 0, 0, 0, and eta 1, 1, 1. And of course, the state can be something else, but just something else, but just local unitary different from this fixed point state. Anything that has the same double tensor structure is the fixed point state. Yeah. The procedure is the same thing I went to say that. So it's just we put it in a different background to talk about this 1D gap system and to classify quantum phase. The renormalization procedure is the same. Yeah.
This is actually not the only type of fixed points that you can have.
I know.
Because this continuous matrix fluid states are also fixed points of this, and they're certainly not product states. And all these continuous ones are of this form, actually.
The continuous, but you have infinite dimension, right?
No. This is because if you allow for infinitesimal transformations, then you have a much richer structure. And then, let's talk about it.
Thank you. So,
But this kind of state, they are actually very trivial, because if you do some disentangling operation here, you can disentangle the dimers totally and then just map them to a completely product state. So by this, we show that every matrix product space in 1D which has a finite correlation length, they can be mapped to product states with local unitary transformations. And that shows that there's basically no topologic order as we define in 1D. So what if we have symmetry? Then the picture will be different. And the short answer is there will be more phases. So I'll give you the example of parity here. As we do the local unitary transformation, we must preserve parity in our renormalization scheme. So we can put 2 tensors together, construct a double tensor. This is the same. But when we decompose the double tensor into a single tensor again, we must be sure that the unitary transformation applied in this process keeps the symmetry of the state. And in the double tensor picture, when you flow it to the fixed point structure, you must make sure that when you decompose it, you get something that has the same symmetry. So with parity, we get 2 two cases. The first case is when the dimers, they are 0, 0, plus 1, 1. So if you reflect the chain from here, you get even parity. But another case is the dimers are in the state 0, 1, minus 1, 0. So when you reflect, you get odd parity.
To a product state.
Yeah, GHC state is something with long-range correlation. And we exclude that from the beginning because GHC state is the ground state of Ising, right? And we just consider just the already symmetry broken state with short-range correlation. 0, 0, 0, or 1, 1, 1, 1. We don't consider 0, 0, 0, plus 1. That is something with long-range correlation.
So you avoid have a gap in the transport break. That's a condition.
Yeah, yeah. Not gap. The largest eigenvalue is non-degenerate.
But in higher dimensions, are you going to require the same thing?
In 2D, yeah, but I don't know how the correspondence.
Because if you're going to deal with topological states, they will be also degenerate. So in one dimension, you're considering not degenerate, and in two dimensions, degenerate?
No, in two dimensions, we always study states.
Yeah.
We always study
but if you're talking about the transfer operator, the...
Yeah, so like for topological order, we only consider one of the states. So for parity,
the AKLT state is a good example. The AKLT state has odd parity. If you reflect it there, you get a minus sign in front of it. And if you apply this RG flow to this AKLT state, you will find that it finally flows to this 0, 1, minus 1, 0 state, which has odd parity. And because of this, you cannot just disentangle this singlet state and map it to the all product states. This is just the final state. You cannot decouple it anymore. So this is different from the trivial phase. And we see from this procedure that Haldane phase is a different phase from the trivial phase if parity symmetry is preserved. Okay, so for 1D, we see that there's no topological order, and this provides even a framework for classifying all 1D spaces when we consider symmetry. And how about 2D? So we would like, we know that there are a variety of topological order described by simple tensor product states, by fixed point states in 2D. And we would like to generate an RG flow based on this tensor product states so that we can flow every state to a simple fixed point and identify the topologic order contained in the state. But if you think about it, it seems hard because there's no rigorous definition of what local entanglement is and how to remove them. But luckily, the tensor product structure of the state gives us a hint. So this is a tensor product state, just like very analogous to the 1D case. We have a tensor on each side, and the black one are the inner indices. And the blue one is the physical index in the third dimension. And all the information about the entanglement of the state is contained in every local tensor. So we naively can think that we can just merge every four tensors into a bigger tensor, and then we do the renormalization. This is what we did in 1D, and in 1D it worked. But however, in 2D, this will not, because if you just do this, the link dimension here will double, and the physical dimension here will be d to the fourth, so they grow exponentially. And after applying this renormalization several times, you cannot go any further. So we need to find a way to reduce local entanglement. First, we need to identify the entanglement structure that is necessary in the to that is necessary for the state, and then we know how to reduce them. So first, we decompose this tensor in a way like this. So we take this part and this part and pull them apart. And so we basically do a singular value decomposition, and this is the link between them. And we can also do it in the other direction. We can pull this one from this one. And the non-zero singular values will represent the necessary entanglement structure for the state. We only, just like in the 1D case, we only need to retain the non-zero dimensions. We don't need to actually retain all the exponentially large dimensions to represent the state. Only the non-zero ones are necessary. So for tensor product states, so here the physical dimensions are omitted. The physical indices are omitted just for the clarity of the picture. We can apply the decomposition for two sublattices in two directions. And we get something like this. We decompose this one into these two and this one into these two. And then we can contract every four in a small square together and to form a bigger tensor. So in this process, we're actually doing nothing to the state. We're just manipulating the inner indices of the tensors, and we're not doing any operation to the state. But this step will allow us to be clear about what entanglement structure is needed to describe the state. And then the next step is to remove the unnecessary physical degrees of freedom according to the entanglement structure just reviewed by the previous step. And we do this by applying a local unitary transformation. So we apply a local unitary transformation and then decouple some degrees of freedom and throw it away. The local unitary transformation, which maximally reduce the physical degrees of freedom, can again be determined from the tensor. And just like in the 1D case, this is the double tensor. We take one copy, another copy, and contract them together. And two tensors are related by a unitary transformation if and only if their double tensor are the same. So we can similarly do something like this. Now we have a state which have many physical indices, and we construct a double tensor from it. And then we do the singular value decomposition in this vertical direction and retain only the non-zero non-zero dimensions of it, and then obtain a new tensor. This new tensor will be different from the original one by unitary transformation, and this is the unitary transformation we want. And this will complete one round of the renormalization procedure. And then when obtaining this new tensor, we can go back again and start a process and do another round of renormalization until we reach the fixed point, and then we can know what phase this state belongs to. So I'll talk about some application of this renormalization procedure. First, we apply it to the topological ordered phase. The renormalization flow will give us a classification of topological order by identifying the fixed point of this renormalization flow. Different fixed point of this procedure will correspond to different patterns of long-range entanglement and different topological order. So, and these fixed point tensors will give an efficient labeling of each topological phase. For tensors not at the fixed point, then we apply this renormalization flow and see which fixed point it flows to. For example, we can study the toroidal. This is possibly the most famous state of the day, and so I don't need to introduce it anymore. But here I would like to point out that the toroidal has a very simple tensor representation. So here is the square lattice, and the spins of the toroidal lives on the link of the lattice. And we put two different kinds of tensors on the lattice. One is the small cross on the vertex, and the other is a link, a green one on the link. And only the ones on the link carry a physical indices because that's where the spins live. And the toric code, so this is the tensor of the toric code, and it turns out to be a fixed point tensor of our algorithm. So we vary the tensor a little bit, which corresponds to local perturbation to the Hamiltonian, and change the tensor product states a little bit. And then we apply our renormalization algorithm and see what happens. And because we generally believe that toric code is stable to local perturbations, so this should flow back to the toric code fixed point. And indeed, this is what we find, that if we only change the tensors a little, the toric code is always will flow back to its original form. So we may also do something more. So here, we can add a variational coefficient to our tensor. When g equal to 1, you will see that this is the same as the previous tensor. This is just the toric code. This is a fixed point of our renormalization scheme. But when g equal to 0, this is the all zero product state. So it's also a fixed point of our renormalization scheme. And we expect to see a phase transition for some finite value of g, because one is topological order and the other is not. And we find that the phase transition occurs at g equal 0.8. For g larger than g critical, it flows to toric code, and for g smaller than g critical, it flows to the product states. I think I'll skip this. So we plot some quantity to see how the phase transition occurs, with just some kind of order parameter, and we see that. So this is the double tensor, and we connect two double tensors in a way like this, and then we take the we divide it by the product of two tensor contractions like this. So we calculate this quantity, and this quantity shows where the fifth transition occurs. And this is when we do one round of RG, it's very smooth. And as we do more steps of RG, the quantity just jumps. So there's a sharp phase transition between topological order and non-topological order. Also, this procedure can be applied to symmetry breaking phases. So this is the parameter G. We're not actually perturbing the Hamiltonian, because we start from a state where we vary the state which corresponds to the a local perturbation of the Hamiltonian. Which local perturbation? You can write out the perturbation. Is you can construct a Hamiltonian for this tensor product space. It's not just simple like local X or local Z or something like that.
So is this a perturbation that takes you to the other side of the Ising-H theory?
Huh?
Does this actually describe the phase transition in the Ising-H theory?
Ising-H theory?
Yeah, that's what this is. Does it describe the phase transition?
No, it's not.
In some regimes you may have a first transition. I find amusing or unusual that it's so sharp. But in some other regimes, the transition is continuous. I wonder which one you're studying.
So you're saying that because this transition is sharp, so it looks like a first order transition.
But it's not a local order
parameter. It's not sharp. It's a scale with steps.
It's not a local order parameter.
You have to know the scaling. I said there may be a scaling function if you know different steps. The more steps, the sharper.
So what observable are you studying here? Well, it must be something.
That expression. Yeah.
So that must correspond to the expectation value of some observable in the theory.
Yeah, we found out which observable is corresponds to. It's just some quantity we calculate from the tensor.
But
But do the variations of the wave function in this scheme correspond to deformations?
Yeah, it's not this
local
one.
Deformations of the Newtonian?
Yeah,
this is not a
It's just another language. So in case theory, the G is a string function. So which is, so this really is a Z2 confinement.
But then that should have an asymptote, a conventional asymptotransition. Then we'll not go discontinuously to zero.
It's supposed to. Yeah, this is supposed to be isom, yes. And I think there's a critical point probably is exactly, supposed to be, not exactly.
Yeah, that's
pretty important.
This
doesn't
work
yet. So yeah, but it goes back to one of the fixed parts in each other way, depending on which.
We'll continue.
So, finally, I would like to say this also applies to symmetry breaking phase. Well, if suppose that we have done some variational study of some symmetry breaking phase while we don't allow the system to break the symmetry while we search for the ground state, we just keep the symmetry and we arrive at some tensor product description of the ground state, and we want to know whether the state actually belongs to the symmetry breaking phase or whether it belongs to the symmetric phase, the trivial phase. Well, we can apply this algorithm again, and but while doing so, we just want to make sure that the symmetry is carefully preserved, because otherwise the two phases are the same. So we studied this simplest example, this transverse Ising model, and the variational tensor we choose have one parameter, this lambda. And when lambda, so first notice that this tensor is symmetric under the symmetry of the system, that is x, 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 x. And when lambda equals to zero, this is the superposition of all zero state and all one state, and it obviously corresponds to the symmetry breaking phase. And when lambda equal to one, this is the all plus state, and this is the ground state for h equal to infinity, and this is the symmetric phase. This is the just all product states. And we apply our algorithm and found that there's a phase transition at lambda equal to 3.358. And for lambda less than the critical point, the flow to the structure of this one. And for lambda bigger than the critical point, the flow to the product states. So
lambda for h?
Huh?
No. It's not
parameter.
No. And we also calculate this quantity. I don't know what it corresponds to, but we still see a sharp transition here. Okay, so finally I would like to say a few words about the possible relation between the structure of the fixed point tensor and the phase it corresponds to. For the symmetry breaking phase, we found that the fixed point tensor has a direct sum structure, which is two parts. The first part is all zero, and the next part is all one. So obviously, the state it corresponds to is the 0, 0, 0 plus 1, 1. So, and this is the direct sum of the fixed point corresponds to symmetry breaking of the phase. And in the symmetric phase, in the trivial phase, we have only one term in the fixed point, which is plus plus plus, and there's only one state in the ground state, that is the tensor product of all plus states. But for topological order space, the structure of the fixed point tensor is more complicated, and it's still not quite clear how to find all the physical properties of the topological ordered phase from this fixed point tensor, and I think that will be a very interesting topic. So finally, we have presented how we can generate a renormalization procedure based on this tensor product representation of states, and which corresponds to loop unitary transformations, such that we can flow every state within a phase to its fixed point state and identify the
identify the phase it belongs to. The fixed point of this RG procedure represents corresponds to different quantum phases, and applying this procedure will give you the phase information of allowing you to identify the phase transition point. And we found that there's no topological order in 1D, and it also gives us a basis for classification of all symmetry protected topological order in 1D. And for the various topological orders in 2D, we can identify, we can apply it, we can also apply this algorithm and identify the phase transition point for between the two fixed points. Okay, thank you.